This week, we deport Rob to Honduras.
Olé!
Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 73. Today is July 16th, 2014. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Hey.
Roberto.
Roberto.
My soccer skills aren't enough to get into the American side, so I want to try to get into that Honduras side.
Yeah.
I think I got a chance.
Yeah.
Just have one name on the back, Roberto.
Oh, man. Hey, maybe, you know, you heard North Korea won the World Cup, right?
Yeah, they won their group, yeah. Good for them.
Yeah, everybody knows that. Everybody that listens to North Korea's state media.
Was that real? I mean, was that legit that they...
I don't know.
Really
probably.
I saw that there was propaganda that they won their group stage. That maybe they didn't win the whole World Cup, but then everything... Then it became a huge joke, just stuff on the internet with Kim Jong-il with the cup, and they scored 94 goals in one game or something.
All right, our break music is provided this time, once again, by the Polish ambassador.
Oh, yeah, genius.
His new album, Pushing Through the Pavement, just dropped last month. So go check that out.
Please do.
I also want to talk to our listeners about something that is very important to us. I'm looking at all of you who download our podcast and then have nothing to say about it. You know who you are. We crave your feedback, so show us a little love. Go to our website and leave a comment or shoot us an email at feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com. If you provide us some feedback on this episode, you will be entered into our prize drawing, and we'll announce the winner on our next episode.
What's the prize?
Can I be entered in that drawing,
which is our big anniversary special, right? Next episode's 3 years.
Oh, I was trying to figure out if 74 was divisible by 10.
It's not.
It is.
It's not a leap episode.
But not evenly.
Yeah, I wonder what the prize is.
Well, I can't say.
Is it our old banner?
You can wear it like a cape.
Like a cape and run around your neighborhood.
I guess it was more like a sandwich board.
Yeah, right.
I may say what the prize is by the end of the episode. You'll just have to just hang in there.
Such a tease.
I know.
A dozen eggs from Jerry's backyard.
That's right. Fresh eggs.
Illegal
from
eggs.
From my chickens.
Oh, I have a good comment about that for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't have to do it now.
Well, we got to do it now.
Oh. Now that you brought it up.
Sorry. There's this crazy old guy who walks around my neighborhood, and he's all up in everybody's business. He goes to the council meetings, and anything anybody's trying to do, he's getting signatures against it, whatever it is.
He's engaged.
He's more than engaged. He's married.
He's a political activist.
He's married to the community.
So I was standing outside one day, and he came up, and he has his pamphlet. And you know what they're trying to do? Now get this. They're wanting to allow people to have chickens in their backyards. Now what do you think about that? I said, I really don't care. I think it's fine. He kind of said, like, well... All right, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm not here to change your mind. He tottered off.
Okay, by contrast, we are here to change your mind. So let's jump into our episode. This time is current events. So we're each going to talk about at least one story that was in the news since our last episode, and you know, communicate our feelings about that. So,
is this Oprah? What is
Who wants to start us off here? Jeremy? Well,
Rob's in Honduras, so I guess I'll... My big thing...
Rob's trying to get a work visa.
My big thing has been immigration in the news and the situation at our southern border. I will admit that I have not read a lot of stories, a lot of articles about it, because I'm not sure I believe all of what's happening. It seems like a lot of hype.
It does.
So I don't really know what to believe. But I don't understand how this all of a sudden happened. I don't understand what the goal is. I don't understand why it feels like we're not doing anything about it.
Right.
And where is it headed? What's the plan? And I'm going to guess that Rob is okay with it. And to some extent, Jerry, you're okay with it. Because this is, you've said before that we shouldn't have borders. There should be no fear of having people come into our country.
Yes. Well, so we talked about immigration at length in, what was it, episode 24? It was a while ago.
Nice memory.
I think it was 23.
Was it?
No.
Clue. I don't remember the exact number, but it was in the 20s. So I'd encourage our listeners to go check that out. It's up on our website. But I'll reiterate what I said during that episode. I'm sure I quoted Harry Brown and said that, you know, a free state doesn't care who crosses the borders. A welfare state is afraid of every rich person who leaves and every poor person who enters. So I think that is kind of the root problem for a lot of people that, you know, are up in arms about immigration.
I think it is, because to be blunt, these aren't exactly doctors and lawyers who are
right.
walking across
well,
the border
sure.
right now.
And obviously this latest crisis at our border involves a lot of kids, some as young as, what, 6, 7 is what I've been hearing in the news. These are kids whose parents are trying to get them a better life, so they're paying the coyotes, the smugglers, extra money to bring their children from, you know, wherever they are in Central America up and cross the border. And, you know, to hear the Obama administration describe it, it's largely the fault of these smugglers because they are spreading these vicious rumors and propaganda that says, hey, if you let us get you across the border, you will be able to stay there for an extended period of time while they process you and figure out what they're going to do with you. And so whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Yeah, how is that a vicious rumor when that's pretty much what happens?
Yeah, and I mean, I know there's plenty of anecdotal evidence to support that, but, you know, the point is they're basically lying to these people because they want the money. And so they're going to tell them anything they want to hear.
That's capitalism.
Well, yeah.
Really, Rob?
Really, but that's not really the point.
So, I'm obviously not opposed to any form of immigration. I mean, I think, you know, if the people want to, if they can get here and they can keep themselves gainfully employed and become a productive member of society, I don't know why anybody cares who comes in.
But a 6-year-old can't do that.
Unless you're, well, true. So, you know, what do you do with that 6-year-old? Most of them have family here already. Because, you know, the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They typically place these kids with family members while they're waiting for their paperwork to process or waiting for their court date or whatever. So they're living with relatives, but it's not like they're just completely...
Relatives who are here legally?
I don't know. The story I was listening to didn't explicitly state one way or the other, but
so
I could believe either.
Yeah,
really.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Allow me to pick apart some of the Jerry talk here, real quick. So, in case you listeners don't know, our anarchist friend Jerry lives a pretty normal life, believe it or not. I mean, you wouldn't think so. You would think he would be charging around, violating rules that were against his liberties constantly, but he tends to be a pretty normal guy. But he has these goals and he has some aspirations, so good for him, and that's what makes the podcast great.
However, so how do you, when you say you don't really have any problem with people just coming over and crossing your crossing borders, I'm sure you're speaking from your kind of idealistic Somali pirate Iceland universe, where there really are no borders, and that's how communities should be set up.
Right. I mean, the borders are imaginary lines, right?
But how do you feel from your taxpayer Jerry status that really does at for better or for worse, for you for worse, and at this time live in this concept of a nation, and you're paying taxes for
costs
certain
money.
It costs you rights and it costs you money and part of being in a nation grants you certain rights and privileges, and it also grants you certain payments that are due.
Right.
And there's a kind of an agreement you have with the nation, like, maybe you didn't want to be here, but here you are, and this is the way it is. You know, you have to follow these rules, and if you, you know, if you follow on hard times or whatever it is, we'll try to pick you up a little bit. There's an agreement there that you're paying into right now. Because
sounds like you're describing the social contract.
I just
somebody should write a book about
you.
That.
You seem way more. I'm wondering, like, are all the Jerrys equally as fine?
Well, so you do the root cause analysis on the problem, quote unquote problem. The real problem is that we are a welfare state, and we're handing out these benefits to everybody, whether they're documented or undocumented.
Roger that. Yeah.
Eliminate the welfare state, and the immigration problem evaporates overnight, because the only people left who really care are racists.
Right. Because you're really worried about. Because what's the Fox News worry about all this thing? It's not. Oh, we're going to have a surplus of doctors.
We're
going
to have too many brown skinned people. Fox can't come right out and say that,
and
so they have to
really
wrap it in.
I like that. Part of me just giggles inside and makes me feel fluttery. But I'm not even going that far.
Really, too many.
I don't really think that either. But I think the real Fox News paranoia is exactly what you're saying. It's that, okay, I have this agreement with the nation that we're going to take care of our citizens, and it's going to cost me a certain amount of money to defend for those citizens and buy roads for the citizens and to set up a set of rules for the citizens. And now all of that's being granted for people that I didn't think I was paying for.
Right.
Right, I think that's more of the Fox News thing. I don't think they're too far away from worried about brown skin people. But,
well, no.
You know, but I don't think that's really the prime motivation. So I'm wondering for the Jerry that lives in the modern world and pays his taxes, are you I don't know, not you can't be that happy about it.
I'm not happy about the way. I mean, I'm not happy about any of the ways that my tax money is spent, frankly.
Right. Okay.
You know.
So these immigrants are being flown to different states. How is that happening?
There are things that I can see my way clear to say, well, if we're going to collect tax money at gunpoint and spend it on things, at least spend it on this.
Right.
You know,
right.
I've heard myself make that statement before.
Right. Right.
This is not one of those things, though.
Right, and
I really don't care about immigration. It's not on the top of my list. So,
and for you, it's just like example number 946 of the absurdity of what's set up.
Right, the absurdity and the incompetence, and you know.
And so, for me, no, I'm not for it. I mean. Yeah, I don't know. I think the only liberal argument. If I can even try to state what the classic liberal argument for, like, the free border immigration thing, you know, is maybe kind of like, I guess, whatever would be like a compassion argument, you know. Like, and even a Christian argument. I guess you could start with the Pope, you know. I think the Pope even spoke out on this recently.
Right.
You know, the Pope doesn't care about his borders either. He's like, look, these people are running from trouble. You would do the same thing. Like, and when people run from trouble, you should take them in. And he's not worried
about...
Maybe
they're not even running from trouble. Maybe they're just running towards opportunity.
Right.
And which is a good enough reason in my mind.
Well, we should... Let's put that in a box a little bit, because I'll come back to that.
Okay.
So... You know, even from that perspective, and you have the compassion argument, you know, that at some point, it's kind of a railing against, I guess, the idea of, like let's just find where they're all coming around, and we'll hide behind the bushes, and then we'll all get up, and we'll have a little orange rope, we'll round them all up in a little ring and, you know, throw in a truck and get them back. You know, that kind of like, I don't know, that kind of like antagonistic kind of thing. I think the liberal argument is against that, but I don't really see any particular liberal argument, especially if you're a lover of the state, right? If you're a lover of the state government, you want the state to be a
right.
solid, consistent thing, and maybe that's where I come. I don't think we should all sit back there with guns and, oh, you know, show me your passport and shoot them or whatever. You know, I don't think it has to be hostile.
I don't think you do that.
But, I know, but I don't, yeah, for me, and I'm not, this is where I kind of fail as my classic liberal. Like, I don't really see what the liberal argument is, if there even is one, for this mass kind of influx.
We have a homeless problem here. We aren't housing homeless people.
Right.
In any meaningful way, yet we're providing housing for the immigrants that are coming in now.
Yeah.
We're flying them to different states. We aren't taking care of the veterans. There's been this big scandal with the VA and all the hospitals.
Right.
Yeah. But we're earmarking money to take care of this.
Yeah, so I guess I don't
seem
like
what
a,
is going
a
on.
Phenomenal lack of priorities. Right? I mean.
Right. And there's. So why.
I mean,
I've seen reports that there's a gag order on the border agents. That they are not to talk to the press.
Okay.
So why would they not be allowed to talk to the press about...
We'll get back into the conspiracy thing.
I mean, maybe that's standard...
Right.
That, you aren't a spokesperson. Like, at the company where I work, they say, well, you don't talk to the press.
Right. That's what I was thinking. So, before we even get into the conspiracies or even the politics of it... My little thing in a box is, you know, they're coming here for opportunity or whatever. Well, let's combine our, like, one-third, maybe we all understand this issue, maybe a third. Maybe we'll all come together and figure it out. But, I mean, I haven't done enough research to figure out what they think has caused this. If it's opportunity, well, there's always been poverty south of the border and more opportunity north of the border. I think that's probably happened for, you know, eons, right? So what... Do you guys know? I heard violence in Honduras is what is, you know, has kind of spiked out of control, pushing people north. Yeah. I mean, that's what I've heard. Is that really it? Or
there's been violence in Central and South America for
the funny thing is the violence in Honduras is largely the United States' fault because we've been deporting all of these gang members from Los Angeles back to Honduras, and they just. They start the gang that they were in. They start a chapter, if you will, a local chapter.
Oh, like a fraternity.
Yeah, in
Honduras. They have meetups and beer pong.
So now suddenly you have this huge gang population throughout the country that you didn't have before. And in Honduras, they actually have political clout, you know, that they don't have here because they're taking stances against, I won't pretend to understand the politics of Honduras, but... I mean, they've been on the verge of civil war several times in recent decades. And in
so
some
it's
cases,
turning into more like a Hamas kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you have, but not terrorists, but gangs that are also politically involved in helping
so
the community.
So you have something akin to the Bloods and the Crips, you know, moving back to Honduras. And then suddenly it's like Sinn Féin. They have this political arm that's, you know, involved in the government somehow.
So we should let them stay in California so there's not a problem in Honduras? I mean,
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, it's funny. If you want to talk about the violence problem in Honduras, it's...
But you can't say that and go back to your thing that you know, they're just coming for opportunity. You know, something seems to have changed. If this is really a new thing and not just, like, you know, flavor of the week, let's, you know, problems in the world, but let's just shine a spotlight on this one. If it truly is a real thing, then something must have changed because you're right. Honduras hasn't been a, you know, prosperous country that I understand for, you know, some time. It wasn't last year. You know, something's different. And even before we would get to, like, then you could just put a little top layer on there of fun Jeremy type things, you know, like conspiracy type things. You know, is this like Obama's pre-election, you know, 2014 election in the fall to shine a spotlight on, you know, I don't really think there's anything like that.
Make the Republicans look bad.
Well, you're importing a bunch of...
Importing?
Importing a bunch of constituents for the Democratic Party.
Oh,
the Democratic Party.
Oh.
So, there you go. There, Rob.
I just boom. I like I like you had importing constituents. Like, yeah, like two, like, impressive zingers, like, in a tight space.
That's, I got a thesaurus last week.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't think there's any importing going on, and I don't think 7-year-old kids starving at the border are
maybe,
quite consistent.
Maybe not importing. Maybe it's not that deliberate, but certainly this isn't the first time that people have criticized the Obama administration for a porous border, right? I mean,
and yet they make statements like our borders are secure, and there's, you know, the world is experiencing an unprecedented amount of calm right now. And
isn't there some stat they'd like to say that he's spent the most money on the border there,
and then they've deported more people in his administration?
And why would you do that? They're constituents. That's exporting constituents. I don't really buy the claim. It's also, to me that sounds like I would have to really look at it. But why not just make rash claims anyway? But it sounds to me a lot like the classic Obama Democrat weak on foreign affairs with war and stuff. You know, like
how much of that is true?
I don't believe he's weak with the military, and I don't believe he's really weak on the immigration thing.
I mean, how much of that can you really believe? That's my question.
Which part?
About, you know, when they tout some stat about, you know, deporting more illegals than any previous president.
You're even doubting the statistics?
How do I confirm that? I mean, it's some bureau within the executive branch that's producing those statistics, and they obviously have.
But you
an
didn't like him deporting
make their boss look good.
But you said before you didn't like him deporting to Honduras. So what should they do with him?
Like I said, you leave him alone.
If they commit
crimes while they're here, we have laws that cover crimes.
Right.
And then you take them to court, you convict them, and you put them in jail, just like any other.
But then
citizen.
We're supporting them in jail,
right?
If somebody is here,
no, I'm good. Thanks.
I guess overall, I was thinking about this. I was recently in Montana, and we were real close to the Canadian border. And just what a gift that is for nations, you know, to just have a huge, I mean, it's a parallel. We got
right.
Our own parallel.
1,500 miles of completely
right,
unsecured
you're just like,
border.
Yeah, and you're like, well, maybe Doug and Bob McKenzie might come over, you know.
Right.
Make some strange brew. You know, it's like, what a total joy that is in the world to have a border that big and not have issues, you know. Where else does that happen unless you got, you know, you can have no issues, but it's all at gunpoint, you know.
Right.
And I guess they're you're just hoping that
would that be the case if all of Canada spoke French?
Ooh.
Sacre bleu. So you think it's a language thing or a culture?
Come on, Canada is just, you know, the 51st through 59th state.
It's just like America Light or what?
It's just like the nicer Americans. But one thing I like to think about a lot is language as culture. You know,
I mean, if you hear anti-Canada sentiments in this country ever, it's always directed at Quebec.
Oh, yeah, Quebecois.
I mean, nobody cares about, you know, you're from British
right.
Columbia. Or,
right, you're like,
you know,
yeah.
We're not complaining about anybody, you know.
Well, and strangely enough, or not strangely, maybe obviously enough, you know, they have their whole, they're basically like a big Illinois as well. I think of Canada. It's like
why,
have,
they're corrupt? I didn't think Canada was corrupt.
Not that part of Illinois. Oh. You know, think of Illinois and like put it on its side, twist it 90 degrees, and then flip it 180.
Wait, you got, I'm lost.
Yeah, right. It's like an isomorphic kind of thing. But it's pretty much Canada. You have like the Chicago of the Montreal and the Toronto and the kind of the liberal wing. Then you have this massive swath of
right.
essentially
of downstate
right,
Illinois.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right leaning kind of rural Alberta.
Right.
Let's ride my cowboys. No, hopefully not
right.
riding cowboys.
You got
ride my
140.
Yeah,
you got 140 red counties and one blue one.
Right, right. That has all the people in it, and you know, like, and there it's much larger. You know, so you think guy over there in Alberta riding his horse at the Calgary Stampede, you know, is
thinks about what Quebec is doing for their, is like,
right. Yeah.
But they're mad because they, you know, there's a lot of oil in Alberta, and you know they're cranking the industry, paying all their taxes to go over to, like,
what if the vast majority of Canada was Inuit?
Are you making a racist claim?
I'm just saying
I'd be Inuit.
Oh man.
We need to invest in a gong.
You're fired. Would that make a difference in the way people perceive the Canada-U.S.
border? So now you're not making a language claim, you're making a racial claim?
Yeah.
I think it would.
I do too, sadly.
Yep. Are the Inuits trying to get into America? Or
no, I'm just saying that's another Canadian population that, you know, if that were the stereotypical Canadian, you know, rather than Michael J. Fox, if it were, you know...
He's the stereotypical Canadian?
Sure.
Who's your stereotypical Canadian?
Okay, Pamela Anderson.
No, she is not.
You've been to Canada?
I've been to Canada. Well, no, that was
it's
more...
It's not filled with Pamela Anderson?
Alan
that was
Thicke.
Not...
I don't know. I'm just...
Larry
trying...
Walker.
Larry Walker. Yeah, I just keep thinking the McKenzie brothers and like...
I was actually speaking of calling Pamela Anderson typical Canadian and insult to Canadians.
Yeah, my apologies to our Canadian listeners.
I've been to Canada once, and I wouldn't like to denigrate the fine folks in Canada who are very friendly.
I have only been to Canada once myself.
It was nice when the exchange rate, I lived in Vermont, and the exchange rate was very favorable. You know, so like a $40 hotel was like a $25 hotel or whatever it was.
No, it's about 1-to-1.
Right,
really care.
Right.
We'll take a dollar.
Yeah, but at some point, I mean, you felt like you were like a rich man. You're like, yes, please, you know, a rental car. Why not? You know, it was nice. Those are the good times.
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to...
Since we solved that.
Now that we didn't solve anything, really yeah, figure anything out about it. But all right, yeah, move on.
Let's move on to... I have a story that I want to bring up. And this is in the show notes. The title is, A SWAT Team Blew a Hole in My 2-Year-Old Son. And this was an essay written by a young mother on Salon.com. Her house was mistakenly targeted by, I guess it was the DEA, because they were trying to serve a drug warrant on somebody, and they had the wrong house. This was a no-knock raid, complete with flashbangs, and one of these flashbang grenades was thrown in a window and landed in the crib of this 2-year-old boy and went off and, you know, did some pretty severe damage to his face and chest, because it is a grenade after all.
Right.
And, I don't know why this story didn't get more play in the media. I mean, it's gotten a fair amount, but I don't know why it wasn't the lead story on the news for like days.
Right.
Because to me, this should be a watershed event. This should be the end of the war on drugs. This particular event. It's not unique. In fact, there was another similar story just, I don't know, maybe a week later about another raid involving a flashbang and another young child being injured. And so, you know, I don't know if we've just all become desensitized to this because it happens so often now and people think, well, they're drug dealers. They deserve to get blown up by a grenade. Yeah. But to me, it's outrageous, and I don't understand why we as a country have continued to either A, support the war on drugs, or B, just ignore it and allow it to continue. Because, you know, now we've got legal marijuana, recreational marijuana use in 2 states. We've got legal medical marijuana in a dozen or more. It just seems like the tide is turning now on people's attitudes, at least towards marijuana. And I think that's going to lead to a change in attitude about other drugs as well. So I'm just wondering, how much longer do we have to continue this nonsense, this, you know, the killing and maiming and injuring of innocent people, all in the name of controlling substances that we have no business trying to control.
Not sure how long it continues. It did feel like a tide was turning with the laws. I don't know. I guess it's within the last 2 years, I would say, more states legalizing.
Right.
But now starting to see headlines that, well, our number of fatal crashes related to marijuana use are on the rise. And
yeah, and I've seen those too, but...
So is that true, or is that opponents trying to push back the tide that's turning? You know,
is it on the rise? Of course it's on the rise. I mean, I would expect those statistics to go up because you have more people using... Presumably, right. You have more people using now that it's legalized, because right. You've got this whole class of people who have avoided using drugs because they were afraid of getting caught.
Right.
Now they're not afraid of getting caught anymore, so they're experimenting with it. Yeah, you're going to have an increase there. So, you know, we already have laws that deal with people driving recklessly, people endangering other people with their vehicles, and certainly we're not going to have people under the influence of drugs causing more accidents than the people we already have under the influence of alcohol.
Right.
I mean, I think we're a long way away from, you know, from that, from one eclipsing the other.
Sure. But do they start setting up checkpoints for marijuana use?
Yeah, well, no, not, so I'm obviously opposed to checkpoints, but...
Yeah,
is it illegal to drive high? And how do they check?
Driving under the influence.
So how do they check?
Of any.
Like, what if I toked up and started driving around and I got pulled over? How would they know I toked up other than I was really into Scooby-Doo and really hungry?
You had
all of
Cheetos
sudden.
All over
right? you. Right. I mean, do they have breathalyzer, tokenizer? I think I wrote one of those in code today.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know how they would make that determination. Like, what's the field sobriety test for?
Right,
because
I guess overall, people that are tokenies don't drive. Right, you're just like, wow, it's a steering wheel and it drives wheels. You know,
or if you are driving, you're in the rightmost lane and you're doing 25 and
like
not
amazed
harming
the way the
anybody.
Lights work. Right.
I don't know. Yeah, we got to ask a cop.
I don't know what the immediate test is if someone were to smoke and then 2 hours later go drive.
Yeah,
I don't know what the immediate
right,
test
you had that,
is.
Right, because you mentioned that stat. So, you know, fatalities due to driving, you know. So I wonder how they...
I don't know what the test. I know long-term or longer timeline, you know, they do hair test and...
Right, right. And I guess if you kill yourself, you know, they probably do a little autopsy thing.
Yeah.
But is he like 25 miles an hour just off the cliff?
Yeah. I think we're kind of getting off topic
Sorry.
Here. This and the story with the SWAT team blew a hole in my son. I read that also, and it wasn't just that it happened. It was that once they got in, they did not allow them to call for medical help for was it several hours?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the result of this was the chief of police for that area saying, well, we're looking into it. It was kind of like, yeah, we know we messed up big time. I'm not going to say that.
Right.
And we're going to try to sweep this under the rug as fast as we can.
Yeah.
And my thought on it.
I don't think that is unusual either for any given police department that is, you know, suddenly put in the spotlight over something like this.
Right.
They're obviously, you know, they're going to close ranks and protect their own.
Right.
And I
wouldn't limit that to police departments either. But anybody who's caught doing something that's grossly against any kind of proper judgment is, that's step number one. How do we not say anything and try to cover this up or get out of the headlines?
And that story also mentioned that, you know, I don't know if it was part of an official statement or if they just interviewed one of the officers who was involved, but you know, they said they didn't know that there were children living in that house, and they had no way of knowing that.
How would you have no way of knowing that? Wouldn't you stake out a place before you do some kind of raid?
So, you know, the way that the story unfolded, this couple and their young child were staying with family at this house. They didn't live there.
Yeah.
They were just there temporarily. But you know, to me, that's irrelevant. To say that, well, we didn't know there were children there. Well, of course you don't know there are children there. That's the point. You don't throw a flashbang grenade into a house where you don't know who's living there.
Right.
You don't do that. Ever. At anybody's house. Because you don't know who's inside. That's why this tactic is unacceptable. And that's why, you know, ignoring the fact that they were at the wrong house, you know, that they weren't even in the right place to serve this arrest warrant.
Right.
That's not an acceptable approach.
This is going to be a very unpopular statement, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
Oh, let's hear it.
Generate some feedback. 9/11 has had an interesting effect on first responders and the military, in my mind. They're all heroes now.
Right.
And you can't say anything bad about them.
Right.
And it's... Rob's going to start claiming conspiracy theory. I'm not saying it's conspiracy theory, but it's almost like it's the hero line is promoted, and they keep pushing that and pushing that.
Yeah.
So that you...
They can do no wrong.
They can do no wrong. It takes them up on another level, so they essentially have free reign.
Yeah.
And
anybody who's against that... You must be hiding something, or you must be...
That's a fantastic thought. I never heard that said. Is this a Minter creation, or have you been brewing this one up for a while?
I've been brewing it up for a few years because, you know, I hear on the radio there's this one DJ in St. Louis, and he is always talking about, you know, I saw this service member. I was out, and I just went up and thanked him for, you know, all he does. And, like, well... You know, maybe you don't know what all he does, and yes, it's a sacrifice. I'm not going to take that away, but let's not go overboard,
right?
And let's realize that, like in any population, there are bad apples, and maybe not everybody's a hero. So let's not put them up so high that we can't we can't even hold them to some standard,
right?
And that's what we're doing right now.
Hold them accountable, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's quite a profession to have some bad apples in, too, right? Incredible power and heroism.
A lot of power.
Heroism. And
a lot of responsibility.
I'm a bad apple in software, you know. No pointers everywhere. I mean, don't even run my code. But the worst that will happen is sake fault, you know?
Man.
That's a different, you know. Yeah, these are...
We're geeking out a little bit here.
You're right.
But I've presented this opinion to... very few people, because I think it's a very unpopular opinion.
Really? I think it's completely reasonable.
No, I agree it's reasonable, but I also agree that it's an unpopular opinion.
Yes.
Because most people, you know, America.
Yes.
Right?
Well, we experienced that here. The guy who wanted you to move, he was going to help you move out
of the country. Help me pack. Yes. Help me move out. Yeah, that's a year ago or more, so... Yeah. Yeah, for our listeners that don't know what we're talking about, we did a on the street interview where we were asking people if America was the greatest country on earth, and I was, you know, expressing my belief that it's not, and we almost came to blows with somebody here in the bar that night.
I think he was more upset that his wife had been talking to us for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
or something.
That was probably it.
We have that effect on the ladies. Yeah.
And
right.
Interestingly enough, when he walked out, he was wearing a jacket that said security across the back
of
him.
Yeah, yeah. So he's probably either former military or, you know, an off-duty cop or something. So he falls into that category.
Situation where
about.
Somebody who has the power doesn't have the right mentality...
Yeah.
Or diffusing a situation. He was escalating something that didn't need escalation. Yeah. So that's, I don't know.
That's a good thought.
All right. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to get to Rob's story, whatever that might be.
Well,
he hasn't figured it out yet.
More talk about null pointers software.
So stay with us. Just in the nick of time, because Rob has just figured out what he's going to talk about.
And I just remembered this article that I read in the Atlantic Monthly, everyone's favorite magazine. Highly recommend it.
We like the Atlantic, yes.
It's very good, and it comes monthly, so you can, like
it's right there in the title.
That's right, Sunday Evening Post. Who's reading on Sunday evening?
Everybody should be.
I thought it was a Saturday evening.
Saturday evening. No, that's Saturday Evening Live, isn't it?
That's the Sunday morning.
You're right, it is Saturday Evening Post. So that's a lot to read once a week. News
Sergeant
week.
John reading the Sunday Evening Post.
So I was reading this article. It was in the kind of the front part of the magazine where there's a number of different kind of stories. And the concept was stating the worry that there was going to be a secession, there's a coming secession of religious people from politics and public society.
Yay! Oh, wait a minute. We're not supposed to cheer for that.
Don't get too excited. So the claim of the article was that this is bad for them and bad for everybody else. And it focused around something that happened in St. Louis. I think there was a dog walking company or a dog bathing kennel company. I don't know. Something having to do with dog care.
Sure, it wasn't God. Are you dyslexic?
Yeah, that's right. No, I'm not turned dyslexic.
Oh.
The business was owned by some Christian fundamentalists and refused service to house or walk the dogs of a gay couple that came in. And then, of course, proclaim their right to deny such service with an expression of religious views.
Right.
This is like the
bakery that refused to make the wedding cake for the gay couple.
They also mentioned that. Or photographers,
right.
I'm not going to I photograph weddings, and I am paid this much per hour to take pictures of your stuff. But I'm not going to take pictures of your wedding. All this stuff is sort of coming out. And the article's kind of thrust was the feeling this guy even goes back to the Scopes Monkey trial as a hit to religious conservatism. And things went down. And then kind of, I don't know how, this is a little tenuous, but saying that in the rise of George Bush had some initiatives in Texas to really bring religious faith and sort of a sacred approach to solving public problems, prison problems, whatever it was, and that really fired up the religious base. And the thrust of the article is that there's a schism now that's brewing between the politicians and the religious fundamentalists, that they both don't trust each other at all right now, and the religious fundamentalists think they're losing. they're like the marijuana laws are coming out. The gay marriage thing just keeps kind of happening. And so over time, they just feel like they're like, you know, continuing to lose the battle. And so they're the only thing they feel like they can do is just withdraw.
Take their ball and go home.
Take their ball and go home, you know. And you know, are we on the cusp of that kind of thing? And I've heard recent, you know, some kind of thunder rumblings about the 2016 election and like how there was a radio show on the local station today that was talking about the 2016 election in kind of a colloquial way. And it really came down to how tied to the social conservatives is the right wing going to be in this election. Like, if they just break free and talk all about your immigration thing and talk about it well, talk all about economical issues, talk all about world things or military or maybe Jerry's war on drugs, whatever it is. Say they hit all those things and don't fall into the Todd Akin legitimate rape or don't fall in, like, we'll get there, right. You know. But let's just put abortion. Let's put you know, Ten Commandments in the city hall. Let's just put that aside. You know, we'll get there.
Right.
But let's focus on this. If somebody can do that, what an amazing change that would be to
right.
our political dynamic.
Yeah, how great would it be if the Republican Party could decouple itself
yes.
from the religious right?
Right.
Even if it was just for one election.
Yeah.
Cycle.
Just fool me a little bit,
right.
You know. Right.
Show me how that would play out one
yeah,
time,
right. one so time, that, and whether they could even, you know, do it. You know, whether they're just so tied to the Ralph Reeds of, you know, of the world. And the other thing to ponder. I don't know if we have time to really think about it, but the thing for the listeners to just let stew in their brain is this idea of discrimination versus religious expression. You know, like, you know, you can't have a diner that says you're not going to serve black people or whatever. That's a you know, we've gotten past that. And we've just determined that's discrimination against, you know, against people and citizens of this country. You know, but if it's motivated by a religious kind of feeling,
I'm not opposed
people,
to that, by the way.
Yeah, well, there you go. If you're,
well,
you're
I mean, I wouldn't dine there, but. You know, I'm just saying it should be up to the business owner to decide that, not the government.
What?
It's a very Ron Paul thing to say.
Right,
know,
right. But
I go back to my childhood, and if I wanted to say I was trying to talk to somebody or play with, there's a kid over there, I want to play baseball with him, and he didn't want to, and I'd sulk back to my mom, oh, he didn't want to play. And she said, well, if he doesn't want to play with you, then don't play with him. All
right,
that's his choice, and
right,
don't
right.
worry about it.
Right.
Why would you, if I go to a bakery, and I want them to bake me a cake or whatever, and they say no, I'm like, well, fine, I'm going to go somewhere else then. I don't
right,
want
right,
your
right.
stupid cake.
Right. If they're you know, racist or homophobic or, what you know, what bigoted beliefs outweigh their love of money, so be it. So be
right,
it.
But and some. So what it raises is an interesting question is somehow for right or for wrong through the course of our history, we have determined that it is not okay to deny services based on somebody's race. Like that was 1960s. We figured that out.
Unless you're denying it to a white guy.
But we've protected the right to deny services of customers based on other things that may or may not be intrinsic to their nature.
Yeah,
like redheads, for example.
I see an inconsistency there. I mean, if you're going to use the big hammer of government to correct that wrong, you need to use it to correct all the wrongs.
Right, but then you have this. But we have amendments. We have Bill of Rights amendments that, you know, talk about, you know, religious expression. You know, we don't have, there's not like a little like sub addendum amendment
right.
that says like, and like your racial preference too, you know, it's not listed in there,
right.
You know, so they can kind of claim this
my
mantle,
religion requires
right.
me to hate black people.
right. If they did that, hey, maybe it'd be different.
This has been a problem. Was it France that banned the wearing of burqas?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah. And then that was just in the news a week or two ago that their Supreme Court said that's A-OK.
Yeah. it's interesting to me that over here something like that would, you know, all we hear about is diversity and embracing diversity,
right.
And it, unless you aren't diverse enough by the definition of diversity, then we don't really care what you think or
right.
how you say or what you want.
Yeah, that story would probably be enough to have rioting in, you know, in a few cities across America.
I suspect it would.
And I just wonder, I've been trying to think what our analog is, because, like, our southern border and Honduras and Central America and then our northern border of, like,
we don't really border
nothing.
Honduras, but that's our...
What's that?
I said we don't border Honduras, but that's
our... I think they're... I'll check the map. Today
let's go to the map.
I have no ability to remember latitude and longitude and which one goes which way. And I've got the mnemonic.
Long.
Well, why isn't long going the other way? It's long. So long.
That's wide.
Long
that's
to you
long.
Connotes
that's
something
wide.
Something vertical.
Or are you talking? Yes. This is
to
wide.
Me, to
this
me, it
is
doesn't.
Wide. This
sometimes is long. It's vertical.
Oh, geez.
To me, I think long. I'm like, that's a big string. That's long. And I just made a gesture of me holding something horizontal.
You're wrong. Anyway.
Long.
Yeah, long, so how do, like, we get on latitude
and longitude?
Like,
really? I have a complete blind spot with latitude and longitude.
Rob.
It's a little embarrassing at certain times. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, especially given your current profession.
Yeah, so
you're
so
getting
our
a lot of latitude here, I should say.
So, like, our particular, we should just recognize that our situation of the northern border of the McKenzie brothers and the southern border of trouble is kind of unique. It's just generally unique. I think France's issue, they don't have Honduras. They have you know,
right.
The kind of Muslim infusion coming from their southeast. That's
well,
you know, so that's their thing.
Denmark.
You know?
That's not
that
unique to France.
Right.
What's unique to France is they have laws on the books protecting French culture.
Right.
And the dilution of French culture by
right.
other cultures,
which I kind of want to respect and kind of hate. Too,
yeah.
You know,
right.
Like,
at the same time, you're kind of like,
oh,
yeah,
it's your French culture. Oui, oui.
Yeah, like when I was over there, you know, their rules as to how many hours a day television programming can be in a language other than French.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like they'll show U.S. TV shows, but they have to be dubbed in French. You know, so they got to go to the trouble of dubbing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I disagree with that. Very much.
I don't
I used to run
necessarily
into that
have a problem with it either. I just think it's funny that they go to such extremes to protect, you know, the treasure that French culture.
But we've mentioned this before, and it comes back to your comment about language. Is that something that we don't have? I think the European nations use their language as a way of consolidating.
Sure. Sure.
Whatever their culture is.
Right.
You know?
We would probably be the same way if Illinois spoke a different language from us.
They do. but, you know, for us, we get the free pass. We speak English, and we just expect the universe to speak our language, you know, so we don't really have to learn a second
language.
They
will, eventually, if we wait long enough.
Right, right. But for them, there's a downside of that. Like, we can't use our English language as a womb and a little, like, kind of barrier that will hold our culture, because... You know, like, if you're in the Netherlands, like I say about the Netherlands, you know, who speaks Dutch? Dutch people, you know?
Right.
There's not a guy in, like, southern Africa that's like, you know, someday I will speak Dutch, you know? it just doesn't come up, you know? Like, you speak English or you speak your local language. So our language is the language of everybody, so we shouldn't be surprised, you
right.
know?
Don't the Afrikaners speak Dutch?
Who?
Wasn't that a Dutch colony?
It might have been, you know.
Once
I said that, I was like, "Oh no!" Yeah. Now Eric's gonna give me a huge history.
So how does this get back to the religious?
Eric is
thing?
Our fact checker on the show.
Let's get back to the religious populace pulling back from interacting.
I don't know what the point of the article. I thought it was fascinating. So, I didn't really buy the author's claim that there was really going to be this pulling back. I did think that.
So even if it happened, what was his claim? That, I mean, what's the drawback to that? Like, I can see benefits to
right.
that. Are there?
He makes the claim. I mean, the article is only this is like a 3-page article. It's not a big thing. I mean, his claim is that we should be battling these things out. You know, we have a conflict. You know, and he was advocating the Christian fundamentalist photographer to say no, I won't serve you, and here's why, and you know, this is what my opinions
right.
are. You know, and then like
enter
and then,
the marketplace of ideas,
right?
And
kind of battle it all out, you know, rather than just like no, I'm only going to deal with my people, and you know.
So I can see that argument that it's just intellectually lazy.
It's a little lazy. The whole article was lazy. You know.
No, I mean
even that.
He's claiming that they are intellectually
sure,
lazy
right.
because they're not even trying to argue the
right.
point. They're just saying,
well, I think
whatever,
I guess
I'm
the
done
idea,
with you.
The idea in kind of the global picture of time is that with the advent of George Bush coming out as a religious fundamentalist president, like that was them engaging the ideas. This is we're gonna get our ideas out there, and this is going to be our guy. And then that kind of fell apart, and then they continue to kind of lose some kind of key battles.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just like, all right, enough. We're not going to engage anymore.
Wow.
We're just going to disengage from society. If you're that kind, I'm not dealing with it. If you're my kind, I am. Other than that, well, I'm only going to talk to people that agree with me, and we're going to be our own little separate. That was a bad thing. I don't know. It's a good article. It was also a good article because there was like some talk about the claim of intellectual laziness on the fundamentalist part. I mean, the whole article was a little bit like, you know, there was a claim that, like I said, like that religious fundamentalists kind of went underground after the Scopes Monkey trial didn't go their way, and then like finally came up in the
That's
George
an
Bush.
Interesting argument. I've never heard
right,
of that
right. Before. I was like,
I think this feeds right into one thing you want to talk about with the Hobby Lobby decision, and I don't know if you want to start on that, but
we can hit on it briefly, I guess. I mean, the only point I wanted to make about it was that. They made the right decision, but for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
In my opinion.
What was the right reason?
Well, you know, they're basically saying that the right to religious freedom will trump the government's compelling interest to provide health care to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, it's going to exempt this whole class of people or class of businesses or whatever from complying with the law because it violates their religious principles. And, you know, do the root cause analysis. The problem there is that we're providing health care as
right.
a government service, not that these people object to,
right.
you know. And you know, if you subdivide it, there's other issues within
right.
the issues there. But, I mean, that was the only point I was going to make about the Hobby Lobby decision.
I thought you had talked about hypocrisy of Hobby Lobby itself. I thought you were also going to talk about that.
Yeah, well, there was a story about that, and I don't have a
about
link to
investments?
That yet. Yeah, the fact that their 401ks
right.
for all their employees invest in these companies like Pfizer and Merck that produce all of these, morning after pill and
yeah.
all these things that they're opposed to philosophically and theologically and won't allow their employees to use, and yet they're investing in these companies. And the article makes the point that, you know, there are these hedge funds out there that are managed by fundamentalists who go out of their way to make sure that they're not investing in anything that would,
right.
you know, would be deemed inappropriate by
yeah.
you know, the religious right. So it's not like they can even claim they didn't have control over that. All they have to do is pull their money out of this financial company and put
right.
it in this financial company over here. So yeah, I mean, that's that story. The funny thing about that story was the story broke like 3 months before the Supreme Court decision. So it's like everybody's been talking about it, and it just made it that much more, I don't know, egregious, I guess, is
yeah.
the fact that the decision went their way.
Yeah.
Nobody was anticipating that.
Well, along all that, you were talking about hashing it out or fighting it out, and after Hobby Lobby, After that decision, I saw another story that the Democrats were working to craft a bill that would force, it would essentially circumvent the Supreme Court decision. And that's an aspect of politics that I really despise right now. It's not, we can't agree to disagree or have different views. Right. It's, oh, I lost? Well, I'm going to change the rules then, and I'm going to win.
I only heard this on NPR, but, you know, it was like a little tight snippet of a, you know, kind of in a roundup. But, yeah, it was like they put the bill forward. They knew it wouldn't go anywhere. Yeah. They put the bill forward so they can get everybody to vote against it, so they can write down all the people that vote against it, so that in the election they can say, you voted against
and
this thing, you know.
That's just dirty pool. Stop wasting our time with all that kind of those shenanigans. Harry Reid is right in the front of all that.
Yeah. It's pretty standard kind of. Or you can think of the number of bills proposed in Congress that, you know, they're just wasting everybody's time, you know.
All right, so let's cover a little bit of listener feedback from last episode. Our listener, Eric, sent us some comments about our last episode at the movies, where we went over some of our favorite politically themed movies.
Eric or ones that we had never seen.
Right, or in Rob's case, it was movies we had never seen before. Eric says, nice topic for a show, even though I haven't seen two of the movies you discussed. Rob's Sergeant John or whatever, LOL. One of the unintentionally funniest things I've heard on your show. Yeah, that was pretty good. He goes on to say, I actually thought the second Matrix movie was pretty good. The last one really disappointed me. The second one had a lot of setup for a potentially mind-blowing third, but they really took a weird, illogical path. I guess I would agree with that. That, I mean, I remember thinking when I left the theater after the second one that, you know, this is, you know, going to kick ass if they, you know. But...
Well, I never saw the third one, so I don't know. And I barely remember. The only thing I remember from the second one is the guy with all the keys, and then the fight on the semi truck or whatever going down the highway.
Eric also says, "Oh, and a minor correction: it's the Wachowski siblings now, not brothers. One went through gender reassignment." I had heard that. One of them is named Lana.
Lana. It's a nice name. I like that name.
Let's see. And lastly, Eric says, interesting discussion of altruism. While I believe altruism is an evolved trait and thus inherent in human nature, I'm not sure it's a driving force in how people behave on a day-to-day basis. So... That's an interesting comment. I mean, is altruism the thing you do on Sundays when you go to church and you say...
And when do you bust it out? You know,
I guess I would think that some people are more altruistic than others, but we're all capable of it to some degree. And... I don't know. Is it a driving force in how people behave on a day-to-day basis?
Maybe we're too bogged down in minutia to let it be a driving force.
Maybe. Maybe it's just lost in the in the shuffle of...
All I can manage is three meals, a couple of snacks, and getting myself to and from work. And beyond that, I just can't...
Well, so I think focusing on something like altruism is perhaps a learned behavior, in the sense that you do it because you see your family do it, or you see the members of your church do it, or that's how you learn that it's something you're obligated to do, to take care of other people.
Could it be the opposite also? You see people not doing it, so
maybe
you realize, wow, that's really lousy. I
Yeah.
Rob.
We're responding to Eric.
Yes.
Rob's shifty eyes were even more shifty than normal. We lost in the.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the concept that it was that it's an evolved behavior, and I think it comes out of the socialization of certain animals, right? Crickets don't care about other crickets; they just cricket around, you know. And then, you know, as you go up the evolutionary chain, you know, you get the more social animals like your whales. I don't know, do whales socialize? I think they do.
Yeah,
elephants,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Monkeys, and then us.
Bats.
I mean, we're not even animals. We're divine.
There's a couple of species of bat that exhibit altruism. That,
right.
You know, a female will take care of other females.
Right.
You knew that, Rob.
Right. Right. No, yeah, I do know that. I watch a lot of Wildcrats on PBS. Yeah, so I think it's evolved in us, and if we're claiming we're more evolved, maybe we're coming more to what we need to be.
So
maybe it's by practicing altruism, we're taking part in our best nature. We're helping evolve our species to whatever the pinnacle would be.
Does it extend beyond, you know, I mean, there's a strict definition of altruism, but is what we're talking about here, maybe, does it extend beyond, you know, you taking care of your kin? You know, does it extend beyond your race? Does it extend beyond your species?
I mean, I think if you wanted to think about it from a Christian perspective, I think that's probably what Christ was all about, probably.
Yeah,
I agree. Was that, you know, you are your brother's keeper, or whatever the parable, I mean, just,
right.
I mean, that's the kind
love
of a fundamental tenet
is like,
you as a human are your mission and what you're supposed to do is way beyond your own self and your own pleasures and maybe the ones, you know, your family and those around you. You know, it's like you're part of an interconnected network of all other people. And some
that's for whom the bell tolls, John Donne.
What's that?
For whom the bell tolls, John Donne. No man is an island.
Nice. A little poetry on the podcast.
Getting all intellectual up in here.
Can you recite the whole thing?
Let's see. No, I can't.
It tolls for thee.
If a clod be washed away by the sea, England is the lesser.
Got a couplet.
The death of any man diminishes me because I am a. You know, there we go. That's
nice. Couplet and a half.
About all I can muster. I don't even remember how
that would
starts.
Be a triplet. All right. Thanks, everybody. For listening, that brings us to the end of yet another episode. I'll steal the line from Car Talk. Once again, you've squandered an hour listening to us. I want to thank Granite City Food and Brewery for hosting us. And by the way, the prize for our listeners who send us feedback on this episode will be a gift card here to Granite City.
Wow.
Nice.
Ooh, hey.
So send us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Even if it's just to tell Rob that he's full of it, we'd especially
Bring
love to
on.
Hear that.
I might buy you an extra gift card if you send that in.
So, we look forward to hearing that, and we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.